For the rest of the hour, a look at lighting. Yeah. SciFry's Charles Bergquist is here to tell us why. Charles.
Hey, Ira. What kind of lights do you have in your house?
Well, of course, we've got the windows and some table lamps, floor lamps, maybe some recessed or track lighting, and of course, your chandelier in the dining room.
Okay, but if you were in a Paleolithic cave about 12,000 years ago or more, you didn't have that dining room chandelier. You probably had about three options for lighting your cave. First was a fireplace, basically a regular campfire.
Yeah, but that took a lot of light to make heat. We're not talking LCDs here. And campfires can be smoky, and the one thing about them is that they stay in place, right?
Right, you're not carrying the campfire around. So for mobile lighting, you basically had a torch, either a big stick or a bundle of sticks. And then there was the Paleolithic stone lamp. That was basically a flat stone with a hole in the middle. And you put animal grease or fat into that hole and some little twigs to make a wick for it.
I get it. So you had your big, your medium, your little, different fires for different uses.
Right. And so recently, scientists studying Paleolithic art went into the Achura cave in northern Spain's Basque Country, and they brought reproductions of these different kinds of lights to try them out. They figured out that if you were a cave artist, you probably used a torch when you were trekking deep into that cave, because a torch was bright, but they make a lot of smoke, so they aren't good for being in a confined space for a long time if you're painting something.
And you know, that's what I was wondering about. How could they make these paintings with a torch? As you say, sometimes they're deep in a cave and in a pretty tight space.
Yeah, not a place you'd want to hang out in a lot of smoke. So they used the torch to explore the cave, but then they switched to the oil lamp for their work light. That stone oil lamp could burn for a long time without giving off a lot of smoke, but it only puts out about as much light as a candle. So you can imagine a cave artist painting just by the light of a flickering candle.
Yeah, one candle. Okay, so why did scientists need to go into a cave to figure this out?
So they were trying to get really accurate data on the specific properties of each of these kinds of lights in the cave. Stuff like how long it lasted, the color properties, how far you could see using that light. They're using all of that illumination data to make a 3D model of a cave with art, sort of like a high-resolution video game, so that you could experience those cave paintings under realistic lighting conditions, and maybe get a better sense of what the artists themselves experienced and intended. I asked Iñaki Inchariba, a PhD student in the Department of Geology at the University of the Basque Country in Spain, what it was like for him to go into that cave carrying an actual torch.
First thing is that the colors that we appreciate are different. The fire only emits, only produce reddish colors. So we are going to see the landscape in yellow colors, in red color. It's going to be different. The second thing is that the walls are going to be moving always because the fire is always moving. So the shades are going to be moving. There are going to be a lot of shadows and the smoke also. The smoke also produces a different sensation. I don't know. The noise also, because the fire is always producing noise, no? The sparks are this type of things. And when we reach, for example, an area with paintings, the sensations are very magical because we are going to see a horse. Like they seem to be moving. It's different to go, for example, to a cave with modern artificial electric torches, and it's different.
Do we know why they chose such an inconvenient place to make their art? I mean, wouldn't you do it where the light was better?
This is the main question of our research. We haven't got the answers yet, but perhaps I think that there could be two reasons, more or less. The first reason is that they want to find a place to put their painting, which only could be seen by the ones that they want. So this painting is not going to be seen for another person of another group or something like this. The second reason is that they didn't have in the mind a bison, for example, or a horsey. The caves or a concrete wall is telling them to paint the horse or the bison. So if this wall is located close to the entrance, they are going to paint the bison there, close to the entrance. But if the wall is located in the deepest part of the cave, they are going to explore the entire cave until reaching this wall, and they are going to see, yeah, there is there, this magic wall, and they are going to paint there.
You're listening to Science Friday from WNYC Studios. I'm talking with Iñaki Inchuribe, part of a team who recently studied lighting in Paleolithic caves.
Would the artist painting these pictures have been working by himself or herself? Or did he have artist helpers holding lights for him? And
yeah, I think that a lot of people know, because there is not enough space for big groups, no? But it don't seem the work for a single person, because it's very dangerous. You need different torches. For example, we have seen that employing the Paleolithic lights, they need more than 40 minutes to reach the areas with rock art. So we have seen that employing the torches that we have measured, they need at least two torches, one to enter there and the other one to go again to the surface. So I think that two person minimal, yes, but because it's very dangerous and one need to be helping the other one to clean and things like that.
Right. So today, when you or I see this art, we've got powerful work lights, we've got headlamps. Are we all getting the wrong impression of what this art means and how to experience this art?
Absolutely. We have seen that if you port your a torch, for example, the light of the fire is moving always. So the walls are going to be always moving, like in the cinema, more or less. They are going to be different shadows. They are going to be different colors, different intensities. So perhaps they entered in the cave, porting this type of lightings, and this motivated to paint the animals, for example, because the cracks are moving, the shapes they are moving also in the cave with the light of the flame. Currently, we use artificial lights that are fixed, so we didn't appreciate this type of movement. But currently, we are using also digital methods like video games, for example, like motor games. And this allow us to appreciate this type of scenarios. We modelate the Paleolithic cave, for example, in a computer, and we place different type of fires, for example, and things like that, so we can see how the wall is moving, how the natural shape are outstanding or not, and things like that.
What do you see people misunderstand about Paleolithic art? What do people get wrong? And you're just like, ah, no.
People, if they think about Paleolithic art, they are going to imagine big animals, very, very beautiful. Perhaps they are going to be a caveman painting this in the kitchen. But this is not the reality. These type of paintings usually are in this magic space that we have been talking before, but they were not made to be for aesthetics reasons. No, they were. We call this Paleolithic art, but really we don't know if it's art because it's something more important than art.
Iñaki Inchuribe is a PhD student in the Department of Geology at the University of the Basque Country in Spain. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
You're welcome.
For Science Friday, I'm Charles Berquist.
Nice story, Charles. Thanks for bringing it to us.
Thanks, Ira. Always good to talk about caves.
And that's about all the time we have for this hour. Charles Berquist is our director. Our producers are Christy Taylor and Kathleen Davis. Our intern is Emily Zhang. John Dankosky is our news director. Alexa Lim is our senior producer. And we bid a teary farewell to Alexa, who has been part of our Sci-Fi family, what, for almost a decade. Alexa is a terrific producer and a caring comrade, and she has served as an anchor for our team for many, many years. Not to mention the only person who could out-dad my dad jokes. She will be missed. We wish her well. BJ Lederman composed our theme music, and if you missed any part of the program or you would like to hear it again, subscribe to our podcast or ask your smart speaker to play Science Friday. Of course, you can email us the old-fashioned way, scifry@sciencefriday.com. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow.